Assassin. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. And if you guys like to gamble, make sure you go to my website, katietrop.net. Click on Sports Talk with Trop tab, and you can find the preferred sports books that are recommended by Sports Talk with Trop. Just click on the banner, and that'll take you to a couple of choices there if you're interested in gambling and if your state participates. So speaking of gambling, I don't know if anybody gambled on last night's terrible-ass game between the New England Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers, but if you thought they weren't going to score a lot of points, which most of us didn't, shocker of the day, the two of the worst offenses actually scored a few touchdowns yesterday, especially the Patriots. Who knew the Patriots even knew what offense was? Because they haven't shown any at all, but they did last night. As a matter of fact, last night, Bailey Zappe got the start at quarterback last night. He went 19 for 28, had 240 yards and three touchdowns. All three touchdowns were in the first half. And he was finding Hunter Henry, the tight end. He had two of those touchdowns. So, yeah, it was a big night for the New England Patriots. They got the win 21-18. The Steelers, though, they did what the Steelers do. I mean, first of all, their defense didn't look that good at all. They did actually get a turnover, but, I mean, overall, they were letting the Patriots just – the Patriots literally walked right down the field on the first drive. So they were able to get it going right off of the bat. But then – while they were playing catch-up, they just could never get going at all offensively. Every time they would get the ball back, it would just be a three and out and a three and out and a three and out. It was just the theme of the night. As a matter of fact, I'm surprised the Steelers even got 18 points last night. They just played such a terrible game offensively. And, you know, I've had my reservations about the Steelers all season long. They've been in the playoff hunt, but I just kind of feel like they're going to be one of those teams that misses out on the playoffs, and I feel like this is the start. Actually, last week was the start of their downfall. You know, they lost to the shitty-ass Cardinals last week, and now they lose to the shitty-ass Patriots this week, and I just kind of feel like it's going to keep on rolling downhill for the Steelers, and I do think they're going to miss out on the playoffs. And another thing, by the way, Steelers fans, if you're one of these Steelers fans who's thinking Mike Tomlin needs to be fired, you're a fucking idiot. The dude has yet to have a losing season for your team. So even if the Steelers finally suffer one losing season out of his entire career, y'all need to get a grip. Just get a motherfucking grip. I understand you're pissed off because the offense is absolute trash this year, but get a grip. If you think Mike Tomlin deserved to lose his job this year, you're just stupid as fuck, and you really need to get a fucking grip. Mike Tomlin is a fantastic coach. He's proven he's a fantastic coach, and I'm sorry, you're not going to have a great year every single year. Look at the year Bill Belichick's having, you stupid absolute morons. But anyways, that I saw that this morning and I thought to myself, God, you're fucking a spoiled little bitch-ass organization if you think your fucking coach, who has been so consistent throughout his entire career and has yet to have a losing season, you want that guy fired, you're dumb as fuck, and you deserve a shit coach if that's what you want. But I know the Steelers aren't going to do that because they usually stick with their people for quite some time. You know, Tomlin's only their third coach in the history of their entire organization, and they've been around for a long ass time, so Tomlin ain't going anywhere. But when I saw that Steelers fans were actually wanting him fired, you're dumb. You're just stupid, and there's no other terminology to describe you other than you're an absolute fucking moron. Anyway, so the rest of week 14 and what we have going on this weekend with the NFL, and also my head-to-head picks with Simon Ruvalcaba. I am still far ahead of this motherfucker. I'm 7 games ahead. Last week, we both went 7-6, so no movement happened. I bumped my record up to 125 wins and 68 losses, and he's at 118 wins and 75 losses, so I have a 7-game lead over him right now. So we'll see what differences we made this week in picks and if they actually make a difference. So let's start it off with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Atlanta Falcons. Right now, the Falcons are a 2.5-point favorite. And actually, before I get into this game, both Simon and I had the Steelers last night. I had the Steelers winning 16-3. He had the Steelers winning 20-6, and we were both wrong. So we started off the weekend 0-1. So moving on to Tampa Bay at Atlanta. Atlanta is currently a 2.5-point favorite over the Buccaneers. This is a division matchup against two pretty terrible teams, so it should probably be a relatively good game. I wouldn't be shocked if it's a back-and-forth game and maybe comes down to a walk-off field goal or a game-winning drive of that nature. Atlanta does play well at home, but both of these teams are just so up and down, and since Atlanta got a win last week, I'm going with Tampa to win this one. I don't really know why. I just feel like Atlanta, you know, like I said, they got the win last week, so I wouldn't be shocked if they lose this one. So I have Tampa winning 23-20, and Simon also has Tampa winning this one 27-21. Then we have the Detroit Lions at the Chicago Bears. Right now, the Lions are a 3.5-point favorite, which is kind of shocking to me because the Chicago Bears are absolute trash. And yes, this is a division game, but the Detroit Lions, they've been playing well all season long. And yes, they've had their hiccups, but who doesn't have their hiccups? And Chicago at this point is probably just really playing for the first overall pick in the draft this year. So the more wins they get, it doesn't necessarily help them in that regard. And it is the end of the season, so why really try at this point? And I just kind of feel like this is going to be an absolute blowout by Detroit. I've got Detroit winning this one 41-13. And Simon has a little bit closer matchup, but he does have Detroit winning 28-21. Then we have the Indianapolis Colts at the Cincinnati Bengals. Right now, the Colts are a 2.5-point favorite. The Bengals are actually coming off of a pretty big win last week. But I kind of feel like that was really fluky. Whereas the Colts, yes, they also have a backup quarterback in. But Gardner Minshew, he's been around. And when he plays, he usually plays hard. And you could tell this team is actually rallying around him. And so with what I'm seeing from the Colts, they just seem like more of a well-put-together team. They've already had Minshew as their quarterback for now, like, solidly for a whole month. I just kind of feel like the Colts are the slightly better team. I do think this is going to be a close matchup regardless, but I do think the Colts are the better team, and I've got the Colts winning a close one 28-27. And this is the first disagreement of the week between Simon and I. Simon has the Bengals winning a close one 27-20. Then we have the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Cleveland Browns. Right now, the Jaguars are a 2.5-point favorite. Trevor Lawrence is a game-time decision right now. It's kind of looking like he's going to play, which is very shocking because, like I said, when I watched his injury last week in real time and just the way his foot flopped around, I totally thought he broke some shit. He turns out he didn't. And with him actually practicing this week and being a game-time decision, that's just crazy to me, but good for him. And I wouldn't be shocked to see him play. So my prediction is based on him playing. And so I'm predicting he's going to play. And if he does play, I feel like the Jaguars are going to have a pretty solid game. The Browns' offense is terrible. Their defense is one of the best in the league, but that's only going to carry you so far if your offense can't score you any points. And so I have the Jaguars winning this one 23-14. Simon also has the Jaguars winning this one 24-20. Then we have the Carolina Panthers at the New Orleans Saints. Right now the Saints are a 5.5-point favorite. And, you know, this is another division matchup. The Carolina Panthers are obviously one of the worst teams in the league, which is to be expected. They don't have a lot of talent. They have a rookie quarterback. They also just fired their coach. So there's just a lot going on with this team. So they weren't really expected to be that great. Whereas the Saints, I feel like there was a lot more expectations put on them. And they really haven't lived up to any of the hype. With that being said, I do expect this to be a decent matchup, and I expect it to be a pretty close game. I do have the Saints winning, really, just because they're at home. I have the Saints winning a close one, 20-14. This is going to be another disagreement between Simon and I, because Simon is a Carolina Panthers fan, so good for him for actually picking his Panthers in this one, which, hey, I would not be shocked to see the Panthers win this with the way the Saints have played this season. But he has the Panthers winning this one in overtime, 26-23. Then we have the Houston Texans at the New York Jets. Right now, the Texans are a 5.5-point favorite. The Jets' season just keeps going down the drain every single week. They just get worse and worse and worse. And now we're going back to Lil Zachary as the quarterback, so it should be another exciting game offensively from the Jets, even though they have yet to have any good game offensively this season. So I'm being extremely sarcastic when I say that. Whereas the Texans, they have just been playing so well this season, especially against shitty teams. So I'm honestly expecting this to be pretty much a blowout from the Texans, 27-10. And Simon also has this being a blowout by the Texans, 28-7. Then we have the Los Angeles Rams at the Baltimore Ravens. Right now the Ravens are a 7.5-point favorite. And you know, the Ravens are actually, especially behind Lamar Jackson, are great against NFC teams. As a matter of fact, I don't think Lamar Jackson has ever lost to a team in the NFC yet. So that kind of gives you some foreshadowing in this game. While the Rams have actually looked pretty good offensively, especially as last week, and they are getting some guys back who have been out due to injury, the Ravens are one of the best teams in the league, and they're coming off of a bye week. So I just kind of expect the Ravens to roll in this one. I've got them winning 30-20, and Simon also has the Ravens winning this one 27-17. Moving on to the late afternoon games, we have the Minnesota Vikings at the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the Vikings are a 2.5-point favorite. The Vikings are just not playing really well as of late, which isn't a surprise because, you know, they lost Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson has been out. But it's looking like Jefferson's probably going to play in this game. He's finally taken off the IR. He practiced this week, so it's looking like he's going to play. And I think that should provide a little bit of a spark for the Vikings. The Raiders, not a very good team at all, even with the firing of Josh McDaniels. Not much has changed with this team. They still don't have a lot of talent offensively outside of Devontae Adams. Yes, Jacobs is a good running back, but usually when you hold out, you just don't have a good season. And so far, he really hasn't had a good season at all. So I actually have the Vikings winning this one. Just with the boost of Jefferson in the lineup, I think that's going to give them a little bit more offense. And I have the Vikings winning 21-13. This is another disagreement between Simon and I. He has the Raiders winning this one 27-21. Then we have the Seattle Seahawks at the San Francisco 49ers. Right now the Niners are a 12.5-point favorite over the Seahawks. The Seahawks, they seem to be coming back down to earth. You know, they started off the season really hot. Then they've had their downs. Then they went back up again. Now they seem to be kind of on the downslide. I know the injury with Kenny Walker at running back, that definitely is hurting him because he was a huge source of offense for them. So that's definitely taken the wind out of their sails. And the Niners are on the opposite end of things right now. They are back to being healthy, so they are kicking the crap out of everybody. But I don't expect this game to be an ass-kicking. Even though the last time they faced off against each other, it was. I expect Seattle to give a little bit more fight in this matchup. I still don't expect them to win, though. I've got the Niners winning a close one, 28-24. And Simon has the Niners kicking ass, 30-7. Then we have the Buffalo Bills at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now, the Chiefs are a 3.5-point favorite. The Bills are coming off of a bye week, so that kind of plays into my pick this week. Because while I don't think the Bills are a really good team, they've had their down moments, but they've also had their good moments. And since they're coming off of a bye week, the Chiefs, they have not been consistent at all on the offensive side of the ball. And when they've played against a pretty decent defense, it hasn't worked out for them. And since the Buffalo Bills do have a good defense, I kind of expect their defense to be the reason why they win this game. And I feel like their offense is going to do just enough to get the scores that they need to get. And like I said, last week the Chiefs, the cracks have been starting to show with this team, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And I just kind of feel like the Bills are going to take advantage of that. And I have the Bills winning in an upset this week over the Chiefs, 20-17. And this is another disagreement between Simon and I. He has the Chiefs winning a close one, 35-28. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if the Bills were to lose this one, but there's just something about this matchup where I just kind of feel like the Bills' defense is really going to step it up this week and be the reason why they get the win. Then we have the Denver Broncos at the Los Angeles Chargers. Currently, the Chargers are a 3.5-point favorite. Both of these teams, not very good this year. They've had their ups, they've had their downs, but neither one of them is really going to be, they might make the playoffs, but they are not going to be a legitimate threat in any way, shape, or form. Wouldn't be shocked to see either of these teams not make the playoffs, which is really a letdown more so for the Chargers than it is the Broncos. Because, you know, the Broncos, I expected them to have their growing pains this year with a new coach. But the Chargers, they shouldn't have these growing pains, and they look terrible this year. And, you know, especially we expected them to be really good, at least on the offensive side of things. And for the most part, they haven't been good at all offensively this year. They've had maybe one or two really, really good offensive games. And the one I'm thinking that really sticks out in my head is when they played the Detroit Lions about a month ago, and they lost that game. They went back and forth, and it was a high-scoring affair, but they lost the game. So that's typical Chargers, in my opinion. But I am going to take the Chargers in this one. I do think the Chargers are the better team. I think their defense has been playing slightly better. The Denver Broncos offense, it just feels like it's just walking through mud for the most part. It's so slow and really difficult to watch. And I just kind of feel like the Chargers are going to be the better team in this game. And I've got them winning a close one, 23-16. And this is another disagreement between Simon and I. He has the Broncos winning a close one, 27-21. And then our Sunday night football matchup is the Philadelphia Eagles at my Dallas Cowboys. Right now, the Cowboys are a 3.5-point favorite. And, you know, the Eagles are coming off of a really difficult loss where they just got their asses whooped against the Niners last week. And I mean, really, if you look at the Eagles over the past couple of weeks, they've really gone through some good-ass teams and been tested. They've gone into overtime and just been pushed to the brink. And the Cowboys are actually coming off of, you know, they played last Thursday. So they basically got like a bye week in between this. So, you know, they're rested. You know, they're ready to go. And also the Cowboys play fantastic at home. So I'm expecting this to be a battle, of course, as usually Cowboys and Eagles usually is, but I do think the Cowboys defense is going to step up. I think they're going to make some big plays, but I also think the Cowboys offense is going to keep rolling as they do, and I've got my Cowboys winning a close one, 28-20, and Simon also has the Cowboys winning a close one, 26-20. Then on Monday night, we have two Monday night football matchups. They'll be on at the same time. The first matchup is the Tennessee Titans at the Miami Dolphins. Right now, the Dolphins are a 13.5-point favorite, and the Titans, just not a good team at all. Miami has been rocking and rolling, especially against shitty teams, so I expect this to be a blowout, 31-17 Miami. And Simon also has Miami blowing out the Titans, 42-21. Then the second matchup we have is the Green Bay Packers at the New York Giants. Right now, the Packers are a 5.5-point favorite, and the Packers right now are one of the hottest teams in the league. They seem to be getting better and better each and every week. Jordan Love seems to be getting more and more comfortable in the offense and with the weapons. And, you know, Aaron Jones hasn't even played these last couple of weeks, actually, during this little three-game winning streak they've got going. Aaron Jones hasn't been in any of the games. So good for them to actually be stepping up without him. But they are going up against the Giants, who are a terrible ass team. And yes, they got to win. Woo woo for them. But they're just a bad team. And I feel like, you know, the Packers are actually playing legit football right now. So I have the Packers rolling in this one, 28-10. And Simon also has the Packers winning this one, 24-17. And we have a couple teams on a bye week this week. We have the Arizona Cardinals and the Washington Commanders on a bye week, and they will not be missed by any of us this week. Moving on to the NBA in-season tournament. We had two ass-whoopings last night. The first game we had, was the Eastern Conference Semis, the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Indiana Pacers. And the Bucks made it an interesting game, and Giannis had a fantastic game, but the Pacers just ran away with this in the second half. It was close in the first half, but then you could just tell that the Pacers, they pretty much had the upper hand in this one the whole way through. Tyrese Halliburton has been showing out this season, and in this tournament, he had a double-double last night with 27 points, 15 assists, and 7 rebounds. So he's been showing out, and the Indiana Pacers are moving on to the championship round in the NBA in-season tournament. And then turning over to the Western Conference semifinals, the Lakers put an ass-whooping on the Pelicans last night, 133-89, and LeBron James was the leader of the pack. Dude dropped 30 points, 8 assists, and 5 rebounds, and was just the dude. He's been the dude throughout this tournament. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, obviously LeBron is a much better player than Tyrese Halliburton, but both of them have been showing out in this tournament. And one of them, whoever wins the championship, obviously is going to be the MVP of it, because both of them have been just shining in each and every game. And then Anthony Davis had a big night as well. He had a double-double with 16 points, 15 rebounds. He had a huge defensive game. And I mean, the Pelicans just got swallowed last night. It was just all Lakers all night. And so our championship round is going to be on Saturday night in Las Vegas. My Los Angeles Lakers versus the Indiana Pacers. As I predicted beforehand, I picked the Lakers to win it all, and I'm sticking with the Lakers to win it all. So we'll see what happens on Saturday night. Pretty excited about this. You know, it doesn't matter for shit. I mean, this is, to me, is it, one of the reasons why I didn't really care much about this in-season tournament is it doesn't actually matter. Yes, they get a little trophy. And for the players, the winning side, each player gets an extra $500,000. So, hey, I would be ecstatic if I were them, too, that you're getting an extra $500,000 for winning this shit. But overall, this is kind of like the whoop-de-doo award. But if my Lakers are in, and I'm rooting for them, and they are rolling through this shit. And the cool thing is that this is kind of like a precursor to the playoffs. And it's just looking like at least the Lakers, once the playoffs roll around in this playoff format, I expect them to play hard because they've been very Jekyll and Hyde so far in the regular season. But in this NBA in-season tournament, they've been playing great. And, you know, even though LeBron was the leader of the pack last night, overall as a team, the Lakers played a great game last night. We had 5-6 dudes in double digits last night. So everybody stepped up when they needed to. And defensively, we really put the clamp down on Zion and Ingram last night. So it was a really good game for the Lakers. I mean, they smashed them 133-89. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the championship round, because both the Pacers and the Lakers have been rolling through it, and Halliburton and LeBron have both been shining, so it's going to be interesting to see. But of course, I'm picking Lakers, and it's go Lakers all day. We did have a little bit of baseball news as well over the last couple of days. The New York Yankees made a big trade. You know, it's been, the rumblings have been there the past like month that they've been going after Juan Soto of the San Diego Padres, and it became official a couple of nights ago. Juan Soto is officially a New York Yankee. No surprise at all. And I think this is a good move for the Yankees, because the Yankees' main issue last season, but I mean over the years, which I just don't get, because they are the Yankees. You would think the Yankees would have the greatest medical staff ever. But for some reason, their players, especially their core players, just keep getting injured and injured and injured. And it's just such a theme. And yes, I know, when the baseball season is long, it's long. So, of course, you're going to suffer injuries. But it just seems like the Yankees, it's been a huge issue for them over the last, I want to say, like 7 years. It's just been really bad. So you would think they would have a better medical staff that just knows how to take care of their players better. But I don't know what the deal is, but regardless, Soto's going to be a huge help in this department because he's young, so he shouldn't suffer any type of debilitating injuries. You know, like Giancarlo Stanton, since he keeps getting older, he's regularly injured for the Yankees. And then you had Judge. Judge sometimes gets injured as well. So Soto's going to come in here, and he's going to provide them a nice source of offense. But he's a young guy, and hopefully he stays not injured like the rest of the team. Now, the problem I had with this trade with the Yankees, of course, they were going to have to give up some guys because Soto's one of the top players in the league right now. They were going to have to give up somebody. But I don't like who they gave up, because my problem with the Yankees, outside of Cole, their starting pitching is very, very questionable. And their bullpen actually was a big, huge part of their team last year. And so they actually traded away Michael King, who was a workhorse in their bullpen. So that might come back to bite them in the ass. They also got rid of Johnny Brito, who was an up-and-coming young starting pitcher who I felt like could help build their starting pitching core. But they did have to, they had to move some dudes. Who knows? This is the time of year where they probably will make some more moves. But I think it's a good move for Soto, but I still think the Yankees have some work to do to get back into being one of the top teams in the league. But this move for Soto, I think, is a great move, especially because he is young, and it should help them out once they go through the injury bug, because it's always going to happen with Stanton. You could tell that it's just a part of who he is now. He's been injured, I don't even know how many years in a row. It kind of feels like it's been at least 5 years in a row he's been injured, and he's a huge source of offense. I mean, the thing is, when he's healthy, he's good. But when you're not playing, that's just a big deal. And I feel like Soto is going to be kind of the guy who kind of moves Stanton out of the way, and he starts to become the dude. But we'll see how it goes. So that's the baseball news. But now we do have, let's move on to the Trop 5 for this week. Since last week, it was announced the 25 semifinalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It'll be whittled down to 15 here in the next couple of weeks. And then out of those 15 players, they will select who ultimately gets inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this year. So I decided my Trop 5 this week is going to be the Trop 5 Pro Football Hall of Fame nominees. And basically, first of all 25 of these guys, they belong in the Hall of Fame. They were all great, great football players. The ones who played, at this point, I'm so old that I actually do know who the majority of them are. I saw a lot of them play. But then, of course, there are a few sprinkled in there that I did not see play because they were before my time. But the majority of these guys I actually did see play. And, you know, they were all guys who stick out in my brain. So of the 25... the five that I'm picking, for me, it's just, I feel like the five most worthy. If I had a vote in this, these are the five guys I would personally vote for. And my number one, I have a real, like, I feel very passionately about why he's not in the Hall of Fame. It really bothers me that he's not in. But we'll get there when we get there. But these five, I feel like out of the 25 that you have to choose from, these five are who I would personally vote for. But like I said, of the 25, they are all beasts. They all were fantastic football players. They're all 25 semifinalists for a reason. And, you know, you can only let so many guys into the Hall of Fame, because the Hall of Fame, of course, is the upper echelon of everybody who played the sport. So you want the best in here. You can't let everybody in. But of these 25, like, they were all fantastic. And they all just gave their all on the field. And they all are deserving of even being nominees. And it is an honor even being a nominee. But these are the five that I would personally vote for, and I believe are most deserving of getting in the Hall of Fame for this year's class. So let's begin with number five, a personal favorite of mine, James Harrison. He played from 2002 to 2017. He was most notably a Pittsburgh Steeler, linebacker, of course, for the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is his second year being eligible for the Hall of Fame. The thing that I loved most about James Harrison is this is one of the ultimate stories of just keep working, just keep grinding. And if you are the best at what you do, you will make it, and you will be remembered. And James Harrison is that dude. He was an undrafted free agent. And, you know, the stats on him beforehand where he was too short, because he's 6 foot. And I mean, for me, being 5'2", that's a tall ass motherfucker to me. But in football, that's not tall, especially at linebacker. And you always want tall ass motherfuckers. But the thing about Harrison is he kept working. And hell, even though he was the Pittsburgh Steelers picked him up as an undrafted free agent in 2002, he actually was a journeyman up until 2004, where he basically was going from different teams' practice squad to different teams' practice squad until finally in 2004, that's really when he started to make his mark with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I can't remember who got injured, but he took over for a really good linebacker. I think it was Higgins. I could be wrong. I could be wrong on who it is, but I think it was Higgins. And he took over for him because Higgins got injured. And once Harrison got his chance, the dude never looked back. And he is one of the most feared. Like, if you were to make a top five list, which I might do this at some point, the most feared defenders in the NFL, James Harrison is right up there with Taylor, with Lawrence Taylor. James Harrison probably made some motherfuckers cry. This guy was so much fun for me personally to watch. I loved watching James Harrison. He was always in on every play. He had quarterbacks running for their lives, and he made one of the most memorable plays in Super Bowl history ever. So let's first begin with his career stats and some of the reasons why he should be in the Hall of Fame. He's got 84.5 career total sacks, 811 career total tackles, 34 forced fumbles, 9 fumble returns for touchdowns, and 8 interceptions. He is a 2-time Super Bowl champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Super Bowl 40 and Super Bowl 48. And Super Bowl 48 was the one against the Arizona Cardinals, in which he made, you know, it's definitely one of the top plays ever. It might be number one, but it's definitely one of the top plays ever. So the Cardinals are driving. They're getting ready to score. This is right before halftime. Kurt Warner drops back the pass, and they're at like what, like the 5-yard line? Well, he makes the pass, and there's James Harrison at the 1-yard line. James Harrison gets the interception and just starts running. Now, Harrison's a linebacker. Linebackers ain't usually that fast. Usually they get an interception and they get tackled right away. Not James Harrison's motherfucking ass. He's bumbling and stumbling and rumbling down the sidelines. Just all these dudes are just falling at his feet until he finally makes the touchdown. And real talk, that was a game-changing play. Now, there were a couple of game-changing plays in that Super Bowl because it is one of my favorite Super Bowls of all time. But this play, the Cardinals were driving. And had they scored, I feel like that really would have changed some momentum in this game. Instead, James Harrison did it all on his own by taking this 99-yard touchdown all the way down to the other end. And that's how the Steelers would go into overtime, and they would ultimately get the win. Now, like I said, I feel like this is one of the greatest plays in Super Bowl history. But then in this exact same game, you have Ben Roethlisberger to Santonio Holmes in one of the greatest catches and one of the greatest drives of Super Bowl history of all time. So it's just crazy to say what play made mattered the most. Both mattered the most. But Harrison made a huge play, and it really, really turned the tide in that game. He also was Defensive Player of the Year in 2008. He was a two-time first team all-team player, and then second all-team as well. So to me, James Harrison, not only does he do his stats back it up, but he has some memorable moments, and he was a very, very feared linebacker. So I feel like he is definitely Hall of Fame worthy. Then at number 4 on my top 5 Pro Football Hall of Fame nominees, this is an absolute personal favorite, Darren Woodson. Played with the Dallas Cowboys from 1992 to 2003. He was a safety. This is his 8th year of eligibility for the Hall of Fame. I think it's been way, way overdue for this guy to get in. I understand why he hasn't got in yet, because, you know, the Cowboys of the 90s, when we were a dynasty, it really was all about the offense. But a lot of people don't realize how goddamn good our defense was. And Darren Woodson was like the heart and soul of the defense. I mean, we had some excellent, fantastic players on the defensive side of the ball. Charles Haley, Deion Sanders, Bill Bates. These are just a couple of names I could name off. But Darren Woodson was always there. He was always so consistent, and he was a leader on this defense. He was a second-round pick, so obviously everybody knew coming out of college he was going to be a good player, but he was so, so consistent throughout his career. It always felt like, because not only was he great when he would drop back in coverage, but he could get a quarterback antsy in the backfield as well. It felt like Darren Woodson was always in the backfield on the plays. So let's get to his career stats. He had 1,350 career total tackles, 23 interceptions, 2 touchdowns, 17 forced fumbles, 11 fumble returns, and 11 sacks for his career. He is a 3-time Super Bowl champion. He won 27, 28, and 30 with the Cowboys. He is a 3-time first team, and he also made the all-rookie team. So the dude was so consistent from 1992 to 2003. I mean, that was the thing about Woodson, consistency. And I just feel like it's 8 years. He's waited long enough. Let the man in the Hall of Fame. We all know he was a fantastic safety, one of the biggest pieces of this defense, and of course, a personal favorite of mine. Then at number 3 on my top 5 Pro Football Hall of Fame nominees, Dwight Freeney. He played from 2002 to 2017, most notably for the Indianapolis Colts at defensive end. And when you say defensive end, Dwight Freeney was one of the greatest defensive ends of all time, hands down. And I saw this guy's career from start to finish, and he was a beast. I mean, when he played, when you were talking about defensive ends, he was always top one, top two. He was always who you talked about. And I say top two because there's somebody above him and the next spot who I'm going to be talking about here who's also eligible this year. But Freeney, I mean, when you think of defensive end, real talk, he was right up there with the Reggie Whites. And when you bring up Reggie White, that means you're an excellent defensive end. And that's how I felt about Dwight Freeney. This is his second year of eligibility. As a matter of fact, I'm personally offended he was not a first overall, or he did not make it his first year of eligibility, because to me, Dwight Freeney is that dude. He was one of the best defensive ends of this era. And the only time he wasn't good was when he was injured, okay? But other than that, the guy was money. He was the 11th overall pick. That's how damn good he was. He was that sought after that he was picked in the first round of the draft. So, you know, he was just that dude. So let's start with his career totals. His career tackles were 332. His career sacks, 125 and a half career sacks, 47 forced fumbles, 4 fumble returns, 17 pass deflections, and 1 touchdown. The guy was money. He won a Super Bowl with the Colts in Super Bowl 51, or I mean Super Bowl 41. He is a 3-time first team. He was the sack leader in 2004. He was voted to the 2000 All-Decade team, and he was also on the All-Rookie team as well his rookie year. Like I said, Dwight Freeney, if you watched Dwight Freeney, if you watched this era of football, we all know Dwight Freeney was that dude. He was that dude. One of the most feared fucking defenders of this time. He was so damn good. Just the spin move he had and just 125 and a half sacks. That really just says it all. So Dwight Freeney, number 3 on my list. Number 2 on my top 5 Pro Football Hall of Fame nominees. The only other defensive end who belongs above Dwight Freeney of this era. Julius Peppers. He played from 2002 to 2018. So they both played in the same era. They were both drafted in the same year. As a matter of fact, Julius Peppers was taken second overall by the Carolina Panthers, who he was primarily known for. That was who he spent most of his career with. Yes, he was also known for with the Chicago Bears, but when I think of Julius Peppers, I think of him as a Carolina Panther. And he was a defensive end. This is his first year of eligibility, and a lot of us are gonna be pissed the fuck off if we don't hear this name Julius Peppers announced on the announcement night for the Hall of Fame. Because Julius Peppers was that motherfucker. He was the second overall pick. Here are his career stats. Okay, you know, I mentioned Dwight Freeney had 332 tackles. Well, Julius Peppers had 719 career tackles. He also had 159 and a half sacks, you know, whereas Dwight had 125 and a half sacks. He had 82 pass deflections, 11 interceptions, 52 forced fumbles, and 6 touchdowns. Those stats say it all, voters. Those stats say it all. Now, I was watching an interview with Aaron Rodgers earlier this week, and even he was saying, because when he was with the Packers, that was when Peppers was with the Bears. And he even said it. Peppers was a beast. You never wanted to see Julius Peppers because that motherfucker was coming for you every single time. Now, in my personal opinion, the one and only thing he is missing from his resume is a Super Bowl. But that's not on him. He shined every single year. He played fantastic in every year. Those numbers, though, I mean, 52 forced fumbles. I mean, come the fuck on. This guy is a beast. This guy is a beast. He was Defensive Player of the Year in 2002. He's a 4-time first team, 3-time second team. He was voted on the 2000s and the 2010 All-Decade Team. I mean, if there is a definition of Hall of Fame player, it is Julius Peppers. So I know I ain't going to be the only one pissed off if he don't make it. That's one of the first ballot Hall of Famers this year, hands down, should be in the Hall of Fame. I think both he and Freeney, of course, should be in there. But Peppers, whew, that guy was a killer. Now let's get to number one on my top 5 Pro Football Hall of Fame nominees. To me, this guy's waited way too goddamn long to be in the Hall of Fame. He should not have. This is his 10th year of eligibility. That's what pisses me off so much. As a matter, I'm not going to say who it is just yet. But I have a problem with the Pro Football Hall of Fame and how long they make wide receivers wait. Unless your name was Jerry Rice or Randy Moss, they pretty much make every great wide receiver wait multiple years. And I get it. I get it. There's lots of guys to choose from. But they've made so many excellent receivers wait a few years. But they only make him wait a few years. This guy waiting 10 years is ridiculous to me because he was one of the top wide receivers of his era. He gets forgotten because he played in the eras with Jerry Rice and Tim Brown and Terrell Owens and Randy Moss. I mean, he gets lost in the shuffle. But he was one of the best players on this team he played with. They made multiple Super Bowls while he was there. And they even won one of the Super Bowls that he was there with. So to me, I'm pissed off that this guy has not made it yet. And I don't know what's going to get him there, but it's Torrey fucking Holt. How have we made Torrey Holt wait 10 goddamn years to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame? He's like the only member of that Rams team who has not made the Hall of Fame yet. Kurt Warner's in there. Marshall Faulk's in there. Isaac Bruce is in there. How is Torrey Holt not here? How is Torrey Holt not here? The dude was one of the most consistent and best wide receivers of this era, and y'all are making him wait 10 years? 10 years? Put the man in there. Anyways, Torrey Holt played from 1999 to 2009 with the St. Louis Rams. He was the wide receiver. He was one of the best wide receivers of this era. As I said, he played with some legends, so he does get lost in the shuffle. But as a person who watched football during this era, and let me tell you what, I never have liked the Rams. I've always rooted against the Rams, and that specific Rams team, I always wanted them to lose. But they never did, and they were so electric on offense. They were one of the greatest shows on turf. That was their nickname. And Torrey Holt was the huge reason why. He was the sixth overall pick by the Rams. So, I mean, he was great even coming out of college. His career stats are he had 13,382 receiving yards and 74 receiving touchdowns. He won a Super Bowl with the Rams. They won Super Bowl 34. He is a two-time receiving yards leader. He's been the receptions leader, and he's a part of the 2000s All-Decade team. That just goes to show you how he's one of the most consistent dudes to ever play wide receiver. How has Torrey Holt waited 10 years? And in this 10 years, we've had years where there aren't many good choices to choose from, and Torrey Holt still ain't there. So I'm going to keep it real. Torrey Holt needs to get in the fucking Hall of Fame, y'all. I don't have as much of a hatred towards the Pro Football Hall of Fame that I do as the Baseball Hall of Fame and the Baseball Writers of America, because the Pro Football Hall of Fame, they're usually pretty level-headed. They usually make the right choices. And if you don't make it, you eventually get in. But I don't know what their problem is with the wide receiver position, but they make the wide receiver position wait so many years. But for Torrey Holt to be waiting 10 years is too goddamn long. And I better hear Torrey Holt's name as one of the nominees for the 2024 Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I know I am not the only one who feels this way and this strongly about it. I know a few of his Rams players who played with him feel this exact same way too. And I'm sure quite a few of his opponents at the time felt that way too. So Torrey Holt is number one on this year's list. And if I do this next year, he better not be a finalist. He better have made the Pro Football Hall of Fame, because Torrey Holt should not have to wait 10 goddamn years to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I'm just saying. But anyways, that's my top five. Those are the five guys I would personally vote for. But as I said, all the 25 semifinalists are all worthy. There are a few, a couple that I really wanted to put in there, but I just couldn't put in there yet. One of them was Steve Smith, another wide receiver. I loved Steve Smith. Not only did I love him as a wide receiver, but he's on NFL Network, and I love his opinions. I love what an asshole he is. I love how he just never holds back. Last night, he was at the Steelers game wearing Ravens gloves and was getting into it with fans while reporting at the game. Love that shit. So I love me some Steve Smith. He probably is number six on my list. Then you have another great, fantastic defensive end named Jared Allen. That's another guy I couldn't include on the list. So there were Andre Johnson, another guy I did not include on my list. So there are a lot of fantastic choices, but I'm going to keep it real. The two names I better hear when they announce the finalists, they better be Torrey Holt and Julius Peppers. To me, those are the two dudes who have to be in there 100%. But like I said, all 25 semifinalists, fantastic players, great players to watch, and they all deserve to be there. So enjoy the weekend of sports, y'all, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.